So we had confirmations down here this past month. All three churches finished the last one. I guess it was last week, and now May is First Communion. So we got more celebrations coming. All three churches as well. I know this may sound a little strange, but as I get older, with each year more as a priest, it's been 30 years now, I'm finding, I'd say like the last maybe 15 of the 30, I'm finding, I'm having increasingly mixed emotions about those celebrations. First Communions, confirmations, I'll throw in a few more, weddings at times. What are celebrations and should be seen as celebrations, I'm starting to find them tougher to deal with at times. And I know why, I'll tell you why. There just seems to be this growing disconnect and distance between most of the people that are in the churches at those celebrations and their relationship with the church. I think it's almost non-existent for lots of the people who come on those days. And I think for many of them, it's literally, that's it. Like, it's not even Easter, Christmas, Palm Sunday, and Ash Wednesday anymore. It's like never, unless somebody's making their first communion or confirmation, or again, like I said, maybe a wedding. They seem to have no idea how to conduct themselves in church. And it's not the kids. It's not the second graders making their first communion. They're awesome. Even the eighth graders making their confirmation, they're fine too. It's the people they're bringing with them. It's their families, their guests, and their friends. It's kind of jaw-dropping at times. You know what we do now when we can? We'll put, you know, you have communion, of course, here, so you have ministers up here. We'll put a person down there and a person there to just stand and watch after the person has received communion. We have them just keeping an eye on the person to make sure they, in fact, consume the Eucharist. Because what's happening is people aren't. We're watching them and they don't seem to know what to do with it. They're holding on to it. We're finding hosts in the pews. That's right. Like, there's like this instinctive, like, what? From us. People having full-blown conversations on their phone during the Eucharistic prayer, really like the most sacred part of a very sacred moment, talking up a storm to whomever. People walking down the aisle at communion, waving at people, stopping and talking. It's like, have you ever been in a church? We're thinking like, is this the first time you've ever been in a church? And you know it's not. It's upsetting. It's discouraging. And of course, it's not everybody. But I think it's most. I think maybe that's the point. We're kind of, have we gotten to this sort of like tipping point kind of thing where, hey, there's always been people who don't kind of know what to do in church. And you can kind of see it. But now it's like most. I think for most, this has become just cultural. I don't think they really believe or understand what's going on here. It's just this thing you do when you're in second grade. You make your first communion, so we're going to be there then. And a couple of years later, you do it for confirmation. And once or twice a year, we pop into church for a wedding. And again, like, it isn't everybody. In fact, in the midst of this sort of chaos, it's almost like surreal at times. You know what happens? You see kids that you know and their parents who you know, because they get it, because they're here. And it's kind of nice in the midst of the craziness. Like, you feel like this closeness to these people, you people, because you're here. Despite the sea of disconnect and disrespect. I'm not saying it's intentional disrespect. I really don't think it is. I just think it's like an ignorance. They're clueless. But it's getting worse, in my opinion. It's not all the time, everywhere, but it's getting worse. You get this feeling that this moment, this sacrament, this sacred moment in this sacred place has been hijacked. Like, it's been taken over in the moment by people who just don't seem to care or understand. And this isn't just me being a crank. I'm telling you, it's not. Like, it's everywhere. Every pastor everywhere is saying, oh, absolutely. Anybody who works with kids and preparing them for sacraments, same thing. They're all like, yeah, it's gone sideways. So what happened? What has happened? How did that happen? I don't know, over the last 50 years, we've gone in this direction. Like, how and why? We could talk forever. And I think there are so many reasons, right? I think there are cultural factors. The culture, the society has changed. We are much less formal than we used to be. I think the church is a factor. In a lot of ways, the church hasn't helped. Technology is a factor. People's ability to remain focused has become, like, pretty awful. How did the hijackers succeed? Well, maybe part of an answer can be found in this gospel. You know, we're in the Easter season. I know it was like a month ago. Most of us aren't really thinking Easter so much anymore. Well, the church is. The Easter season goes for like 7 or 8 weeks. The first half, all we talk about is Easter. The Gospels are all Easter stories, resurrection accounts. Jesus just keeps showing up and showing himself to the people. Like, look, I'm here. I'm back. I rose. Look at my hands. Look at the scars. We hear, for the first 3 or 4 weeks, we just keep hearing it over and over and over again. And now, these last couple of weeks, it's going to shift. The Gospels are going to change. They're going to be about this, I think. Okay, so he's risen. We get it. What do we do with that? Like, so what? Okay, we know what Easter is. We know he rose from the dead. Like, is that supposed to change things? Yes, It is absolutely supposed to change things. And I think that's why we will do another, we'll do the next 3 or 4 weeks and hammer away that. How does this resurrection change things? Prior to the resurrection, you know what? He was seen, Jesus, as like he was one more in a long line of prophets and philosophers and teachers and rabbis. These people who said great things. They spoke for God. The resurrection changes all of it. The resurrection proves, and we had proof even before it, Jesus was doing things before Good Friday that nobody else had done before him. But now, resurrection, nobody rose from the dead. You know, President, I remember, maybe you remember, President Obama, I guess he said this, it's kind of a famous quote. It was 2009, he had just been elected. And actually, it was a big win for Democrats. They won the House and the Senate. So they had everything. So there was a meeting, I think, in the Oval Office. It was Obama and the Republican leadership. And they were talking about legislation, agendas, and they were clashing. And Obama was looking at him like, hey, we're going this way. He said, guys, elections have consequences. And at the end of the day, I won. That was a little smug, but it was true. He won, so his agenda more or less happens. Elections do have consequences. So does resurrection. So does rising from the dead. It's got implications. It's got consequences. And I think what we hear in this gospel is some of the consequences. Because he rose, this is how things have to be for us. He says, I am the vine, you are the branches. Just as a branch can't bear fruit without the vine, neither can you without me. So remain in me. If you remain in me, you will bear fruit. If you don't, you won't. If you separate yourself from me, you won't make it. So there's a consequence of resurrection. He keeps saying, remain in me. I think he says it 9 times in this not very long gospel. It's like, okay, enough already with the remain in me. What does that even mean? It's got to mean something. It's got to be important because he won't stop saying it. We need to remain in him. We have to let him in. I think it means this. Jesus wants to live his life in us. Like, okay, but what does that mean? What's that supposed to look like? Letting his life live within us. Like, what does that even mean? Well, I'll give an example of what I think it means, and it's one of like a billion examples. Here's just one of what this remain in me thing means. We've got 4 nursing homes down here on the island where the church is present. I mean, they're all secular nursing homes, but we're able to celebrate Mass there. Eucharistic ministers, this awesome army of Eucharistic ministers goes and they visit, they bring communion to people, they spend time with them. Anyway, once a month we say a Mass in each of the homes. Father Anthony used to cover it all. So now it's me and Father Stephen. I find going to the nursing homes very tough. I kind of hate going. I don't like saying that. I'm not proud of that. But I kind of hate going. You know, when you get a call to anoint somebody, last rites, well, that's, you know, you kind of go in, you're there, you say the prayers, the sacrament, and you leave. You're not there too long. Even that's tough. But we go and we celebrate Mass there. That's what I find so tough. They're just such sad places. I feel like they're almost like prisons for those who have to stay there. I think family often feels like they're leaving somebody in a prison when they say goodbye. The people are just so lost. So many are so out of it. I also know this with me, and I don't think I'm alone. I think there's like a very sobering fear when I go, and I think, oh, like, please God, let this not be me. Let me not be living in one of these places sometime down the line. And the fear of that, for so many, there's like such a loss of dignity, certainly independence. And it's not a knock on the facilities, really. They're just kind of objective. I think sometimes it's a knock. Sometimes you see stuff and you're thinking, hey, a little more respect for this person. But generally, it's just the nature of the place, isn't it? So Father Stephen and I have to take turns going. I offered him $150 a couple of weeks ago. I was like, come on, please take my Mass. He was like, no way. Because he finds it as tough as I do. But celebrating Mass, it's usually chaos. People are just yelling out, blurting out stuff that makes no sense. Then other people yelling at them to be quiet. People are sleeping. It's usually like 120 degrees in the place. I'm like, I'm sweating. I'm like, I'm gonna pass out. I'm trying to give like a little homily. It's like nobody's listening. Nobody seemingly has a clue. It's kind of brutal. Like, I can't wait till the Mass is over. I can't wait till I get out of the building and like breathe in some fresh air. And then, at some point, I'm at Mass. I'm in the middle of Mass. This doesn't happen every time, but it happens most times. I look up, and I meet eyes with somebody who's sitting there in a wheelchair, and we stare at each other for 2 seconds. And I can tell by the look in their eyes, they're aware. They're there. They know what's going on. They're surrounded by people who don't, but they are. And in that moment, I'm reminded that this is exactly where I need to be. It's where the church needs to be, because it's where Jesus went. And I think this remain in me is that. If he's a part of us, if he wants us to be like one with him, then that means we got to go where he went. So Jesus went to nursing homes? Well, not really. But Jesus went where the suffering was. He went to the forgotten and the lost and the confused and the lonely. He went to people and places that were kind of gross and smelly and just sad. So yeah, he kind of did go to nursing homes. And when we're there, we let him remain in us. He lives in us when we go to the places that he went. And like I said, there's a million of those places. It's not just nursing homes. It's wherever there's suffering, wherever there's hopelessness. You know, those people at the first communions and the confirmations, the disruptors, the hijackers. I suspect that they have no idea that resurrection has consequences. They'd be like, what? Like, what does that mean? The notion of Jesus remaining in us and us in him, the idea of like letting him in to who we are, would be like a foreign language to those people. It's why they act, I think, the way they do. They just haven't a clue. Well, we're not them. We're here. You're here. It's a Sunday morning in April. There's no first communions or confirmations today. We're here for different reasons. We've let him in. But here's the question, and maybe the challenge. We've let him in, but how far in? How much do we let him in? How far into your house do you let Jesus? Or does he just sort of hang out on the stoop? Or maybe in the front porch? But does he get into like the inner sanctum? Does he get into the places where we are and our lives are? I need to get a better attitude about Mass in the nursing homes. I need to let him further in. How about you?